Folks, you're listening to Ohio Exopolitics, a pre-recorded show. I've got Rem Robinson on the line with me. I'm going to kind of do a pretty much normal show, but I think he's going to jump in. We're going to compare notes here a little bit.
Sure. Hello.
You sound good. I think we're good here.
Okay, great.
And we're recording, and I think we're good to go. I thought I was going to be able to play some clips today, but I might hold off on that. I'm going to just kind of... I've got an interesting example of one of the things I've been studying in the Might of Thoughts that I want to use today. But first, I want to step back a little bit, as I often do on this show, to give people an overview. Because I think the overview is very, very critical in being able to understand and make sense and really see the reality of this whole thing that we're talking about today. Billy Meyer is an 80-year-old man. He lives in Switzerland, about 45 minutes or so east of Zurich, in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti. It's nestled among the pine forest and the snow-capped mountains of Switzerland. Billy is a very prolific author. He's written 50 books. And why has he written all these books? Because these books are part of a very ancient teaching called the Teaching of the Spirit. And what this deals with is information that guides us in how we're supposed to live. In other words, there are laws of nature and laws of the universe that we don't know here on the earth. And because of that, we're living in ways that are destroying our planet, destroying our society. So these teachings are not just some new age stuff. What we're dealing with is the survival and the thriving of the human race. So Billy he's 80 years old now. He's written 50 books.
He's 81.
He's over 80 now. Thank you for correcting me. And his writings are very important. And I'm going to give some examples today. The Meyer information says Billy's spiritual consciousness is what's called the universal prophet. And the universal prophet has his spirit form, his spiritual consciousness. So let's talk about the spiritual consciousness a little bit. Everyone has a spiritual consciousness. It is the part of you that never dies. We all have what's called a spirit form that resides in an area of the middle brain called the superior colliculus. And one of Billy's contacts, a woman named Semyase, said, "The spirit form is the wonder of all wonders. It never dies. It records everything that you do, even your impulsations, and it will tell you if your thinking is right or wrong." So your spiritual consciousness, if you're a typical Earth human, is about 4.5 million years old, which seems like a really long time, but not in terms of the spiritual consciousness, which lives on through many, many lifetimes. It can become much, much older than that, and it will become much older than that. Now, we have what's called a material consciousness, which is who you are in this lifetime. And that's what we're dealing with right now. In a sense, we're going to talk about one of these creational natural laws, which is the law of harmony, and how to think with your material consciousness in a way that harmonizes with your spiritual consciousness and therefore also the universe, because there's a universal consciousness which also thinks in a neutral positive way. So if we think in a neutral positive way, it will enhance what's called our Lebenskraft or the life force. And I came across something recently, and I don't know, Rem, did you have any... I sent you some links, right? Did you?
You did, yeah.
Were you able to make any sense of any of that?
Well, you sent me the one about the fight or the...
Yeah.
That guy.
Set the stage there a little bit. Well, let me give you the background for this.
Okay.
There's this sport. We're talking about, how does this relate to the Bill and Mary case?
That's a totally different thing.
There's a trend in history right now, and I think you can you would agree with this, Rem, that our society is not on the correct path of evolution, right?
Right.
Right. We're in many ways we're even devolving.
Well, in the beginning of Billy's contact, one of the very first things that they told him, probably Semyaze told him, was that we are more advanced technically than we are spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of our biggest problems on Earth, is having a lower spiritual evolvement than technological progress development. Our technology has gone way further than our spiritual evolvement in a very short amount of time, especially in the last 150 years or so.
Yeah. That's such a good point. And this whole story that we were talking about with this, first of all, there's a sport. It's called mixed martial arts. It's growing in popularity like crazy. I must admit, I do follow it. I don't pay for the shows anymore and watch them, but I used to, and I still kind of follow it. But it's you could argue that it's very degenerate in a way. In a sense, all of our entertainment is. But with mixed martial arts, it's very brutal. They kick, they knee, they elbow. You can be choked unconscious. It's crazy stuff. It's just really incredible. And there's a guy named Conor McGregor. And he is a lightweight. He was the lightweight champion, but he kind of crossed over and talked Floyd Mayweather into fighting him in boxing. And they had this big match. And Floyd Mayweather still won. I don't know if you follow boxing at all, but this is a guy he's won 50 fights in a row, and he's never been beaten, Floyd Mayweather. But yeah. Conor gave him a good run for his money, even though he's not a boxer. Okay, and Rem is thinking, well, let's get back to the Meyer case. Well, I'm trying to get
that's
back.
Okay. I'm all right. I am curious to see where you're going with this.
Oh,
I kind of know. I think I know where you're going with it, but continue.
It's so strange because Conor McGregor is like a trash talker. He insults his opponents. He's just over the top. It's just bad. He throws things at him, and during press conferences, he tries to start fights with them literally, right there in the press conferences, and he does a lot of horrible stuff. So recently, and I'll try to make this as brief as possible. Since he's now worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and that's part of the problem here, is that we've elevated. And maybe you could comment on this, Rem. We've elevated entertainment to a level that's so ridiculous. So these people make hundreds of millions of dollars. Like Conor made something like $100 million or $200 million in this last fight. Which,
wow.
You talked about being technically too evolved. Well, take somebody who grew up in a slum, basically, in Ireland, like Conor McGregor, and he... fighting was his only way out of the slum. Now he's worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
Wow.
So where is his stability going to come from? How is he going to be able to manage a completely new lifestyle? If you understand where I'm going with this. How is he going to be able to manage his thoughts?
That's very difficult for me to imagine. You know, it's totally it's so difficult. That's like one of those, probably one of those things that's unique on this planet, you know? Uh-oh.
What's guy that?
There's a guy over there. He'd set off his car alarm.
Oh my God. It's typical. There's always something against the striving. It's part of, it's true. I mean, I will tell you how many times in this show that I've dealt with. Usually it's a dog snoring right beside me or the cats are going crazy or something.
Yeah. But, it's a really beautiful day out here though. It's springtime and the flowers are all popping up out of the ground and it just snowed yesterday, so
we had the same thing.
It's yeah. Oh, really?
Are you in Colorado?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in Boulder, Colorado.
Snow last night. It's all melted. It's beautiful outside. Sunny. Yeah. Yeah.
So
back to Conor McGregor. For one reason or another, one of the fighters in this big UFC fight kind of picked a fight with one of Conor's boys, his friends or whatever. So Conor takes his private jet. He has his own Learjet. Loads it with 20 street thugs that he grew up with. Now, okay, so you have a guy who's basically a street thug, and I hate to say that, who has a private jet. Now think about that for a minute. Just let that sink in. Okay. So they fly to the United States, and they're pissed. Okay, so it's just like street wars, you know, it's like gang fights. So he takes his 20 people and they attack this bus. Okay, and they're throwing dollies through the windows and chairs and other things. And, you know, lots of people are injured. It's a total mess. He ends up with getting 3 charges of assault against him and 1 other charge. So this is where we are now.
And they're making a big deal out of that now.
Oh, yeah. So he may go to jail. He was arrested. He got out on bond. So why am I bringing this up? Well, it's all about thoughts, okay?
Yeah.
So, and there's a particular passage here that, because you can see how absurd doing something like this is. It's just absolutely absurd what he's done. Now, and this is on page 224, and this is pretty close to exactly what it says. It says, this is in contrast to entangled ideas, confuse the thoughts, and abruptly go from one extreme to another, whereby a misdirection of the thoughts arises, which triggers emotions and can even lead to manslaughter and murder. Okay, let's step through this for just a second. Now, the word tangled can mean matted, twisted. Ideas, the word ideas, and we've talked about this on the show lately, ideas are incomplete thoughts from the perspective of the Meyer material. Something that hasn't been completely thought through, it hasn't been totally developed. So when these ideas, which are not complete, start to confuse your thoughts, and confusion means that the boundaries between things have been blurred. So you can't see the distinctions, you know, between category A and category B and category C because things are starting to blend together. So these tangled ideas, they've confused your thoughts. And the next thing that happens is that your thoughts go from one extreme to another. So let me get to this. I'll make this a little clearer, because what Billy's doing is analyzing wrong thoughts, a system of wrong thoughts. What happens? So you go from tangled ideas. Ideas are incomplete thoughts that aren't completely developed, which cause confusion. And you go from one extreme to another, which causes a misdirection of your thoughts, which starts to trigger. And that word in the German, and I have my German expert on, Auslösen. I don't know if you're familiar with that particular word.
I meant to look it up, and I still haven't looked it up.
Okay. Auslösen in this case can mean to trigger emotions, okay?
Okay.
Which can lead to manslaughter and murder. In this case, he didn't murder anybody, but he just assaulted a whole group.
But it could have ended in murder. Manslaughter. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, So it's a good example of how this is a real life situation. So,
because
I can't imagine any time in my life when tangled ideas or tangled thoughts could lead to manslaughter in my life. But
you're a good example. Guy. I tell you, man, you're a good guy, because
I know
on more than one occasion I've had some tangled thoughts that I could have been like a Conor McGregor. Yeah. So I guess I can kind of relate to it. Go ahead.
But it's a good example, you know, it was hard for me to imagine when that would, like a specific example of how that would play into reality. 'Cause I'm always reading Billy's books and articles and such, and trying to integrate it with reality and trying to compare it to reality. And this is one good example of how that actually, because you might read that and think, well, that sounds a little bit extreme.
Sure.
Tangled thoughts and ideas to then lead to something so extreme to having somebody be dead over it, you know?
You know, but, you're a good guy, because I know there's been times in my life where I've been so angry that I could have done something, you know, something really bad. And I'm just thankful that I didn't. But yeah. Let's role play a little bit. So you be Conor McGregor for a minute.
Okay.
I'm one of your homies, okay, one of your buds. You've decided you want to fly to the United States in your private jet, and you want me to come along because I grew up with you. And we fought together before in some of these gang disputes, and I helped you out, and you want me to come to the United States, okay? So convince me that I should come. And the reason I'm doing this, because you can be Conor, so you have this idea, okay? You want to go to the United States. You know, this idea isn't thought through completely, right? You want to come to the United States, and we're going to kick this guy's butt, okay? And I got to be back up in case his buddies are there. So so let's role play a little bit. So you try to, you know, make the offer to take me to the United States, and then I'm going to present, instead of an idea, an ideal, you know, and kind of contrast the two. So yeah.
So but you're Conor? Or am I Conor?
You're Conor. You want us to go to the United States and kick some butt.
And so who are you?
Just call me Mark.
Oh.
Pretend I'm a friend.
Yeah, okay. Yo, Mark, come on over. I want you to get on my jet. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Come on over here and just come over to the United States.
Okay. Wait a minute, Conor. Let's think about this a minute. So you want to fight Khabib, right? Khabib Nurmagomedov? You want to kick his butt because he roughed up one of your friends or whatever. That's what you want to do, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You want to beat him up. Well, Conor, he's a fighter. You got to remember something. He's a fighter. So let's just chill for a little bit. Let's set up a real fight. I mean, let's set up an MMA fight, right? And let's get you where you can make, I know it's not a lot of money to you anymore, but let's set up an MMA fight where you can make, say, $20 million. Why would you fly all the way over there for nothing, beat him up, when you can fly over there in a month or two, beat him up and make $20 million? And everyone in the world will see him humiliated by the great Conor McGregor. Now, wouldn't that make more sense? So anyway, that's my little role play. But you see, if you sit and you think for a while, and then you think these things through, you find out, wow, there's a better way to go about things. You know, that's the difference between an idea. Okay, let me. This is what the Meyer Information says about an idea. IDEAS. They confuse the thoughts. They make the thoughts go from one extreme to another. They cause a misdirection of the thoughts. They trigger emotions. They can lead to murder and manslaughter. They take away all the room in the consciousness for virtue and rationality. So they push out virtue and rationality. Irrationality and virtuelessness start to govern in the consciousness because of ideas. You can no longer set a seal. Is that a good pronunciation or is that bad?
I think that's pretty good. Seal?
Okay. Yeah. So
yeah.
A seal can't be imagined or realized.
And just for those who are listening, it's kind of like a goal or an aim or a culmination. I think culmination point is what they refer as the best, a better translation of zeal.
But, good point.
I always thought of zeal as being something that you're not supposed, like a goal, you get mm-hmm. there and then you stop. Zeal is something somebody told me that zeal is more like, yeah, that's a place that you reach and then you keep going further, you keep striving. Wow. You don't just stop striving once you reach the goal.
That's why
is not like a great translation for zeal, which is, if you look up zeal in Google Translate, it might give you goal, but mm-hmm. Billy doesn't want goal. He doesn't like that translation. He's so specific.
I know. That's very good. Another thing that happens when we get tangled ideas is only ideas can be followed. We cannot convert the IDEA into an IDEAL. And then you become trapped by your ideas and you cannot get free of them. So how do we convert, and it can be done, you can convert ideas into ideals. So if you get an idea like we just had, Connor wanted to grow the United States and take care of, beat up this other fighter, Khabib. Let's call him Khabib. That's the easiest way to, he's from Russia, by the way. So what we can do, Connor, is we can schedule in 2 months, you can fight Khabib in Russia and we'll make a deal with the, Ultimate Fighting Championship people that you will get paid at least $20 million. So wouldn't that make sense?
Sure.
So anyway, that's so we're converting the idea into an ideal. So there's something about an idea that we must also look at. The idea has something called unvalues associated to them. You know, when I started down this whole study, Rem, it took me down a real rabbit hole that I had no idea was there. So let's take a look at, hopefully it's here in my notes, about the ideas and what our unvalues are. Unvalues are things that we value. For example, you can have psychopathic anger that you hold on to all the time.
Yeah,
that's another unvalue. Let me keep going here. Here we go. It's Figu Bulletin 68. I don't know if you want to pull that up or if you can find it. But
I'm not in a place right now where I'd be able to. That.
Okay. What are you in, a garage or something like that?
not like last time. I'm just sitting outside.
Oh, seriously? That's pretty cool. Huh? That's really good. Okay. This is Patah speaking to Billy, and he's talking about these unvalues, which he says which happens out of self-protection and boastfulness and so on. But listen to what is observed in relation to the behavior patterns of psychopaths in many different regards. Conor McGregor was acting like a psychopath, literally. Think about it. The guy he's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. He has a private Learjet, and he takes all these street thugs from Ireland over to the United States and attacks this bus. It's crazy. Anyway, let me continue. There are thereby many factors which I want to list in a decisive wise. Thus, a greater number of the following unvalues are characteristic of psychopaths. Unvalues, again, build up ideas. Let me run down these, just a few of these. There's a lot of them. lack of logical decisions, lack of rational conduct, irresponsible activity, frequent change of sexual partner, pathological lying, making untenable promises and then breaking them, exaggerated thoughts and feeling with regards to the value of your own person, pretended charm, boredom. This is one I thought was very interesting. If you're having boredom, you're having one of the unvalues of a psychopath. Deceitful behavior, parasitism, deficiency with regard to real and long-term results in many forms and wishes. Here's something, and I've seen this before in psychopaths or sociopaths. Manipulative behavior with regard to the fellow human beings. Have you ever been, ever seen that? Have you ever been had that experience before?
Of course. Who hasn't, right? I think a lot of people have. I'd be surprised to hear somebody say that they haven't been or haven't known anybody to be manipulative. I think a lot of people have psychopathic tendencies, but might not be labeled a psychopath. And that's,
yes.
What was it? Was it like 18 of those? You should be worried if you can count 18 of those as your own.
that's what it says. 18 yeah. of the 70. And endorsement of torture is one of these. Hate mentality, egoism. Another. I'm just kind of scanning right now. Selfish lifestyle. So there's a lot here. These are all on values. So if your ideas are being influenced by these unvalues, one of these was, I just thought I saw it, had to do with like no sense of consciousness. Let's say that. Someone that would just like, you know, kill somebody, you know.
Conscienceless.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yes. Lack of a conscience.
Yeah, no conscience, no remorse, no feeling of life and its value. So it's the power, when our thoughts go down the wrong path, we can ruin our life so quick. It's very, very amazing.
Very quick, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I marvel at that sometimes, how quick you can ruin your own life, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everybody is always kind of on the verge of just making one wrong decision that could end their entire life, you know? And not just by dying. I'm talking about, like, you know,
yeah.
you lose
your job, you lose your marriage, you make some stupid financial decision, you lose all your money. You make some stupid decision where you lose your health, you know.
Yeah, you turn the wheel, you're driving your car and you turn your car into the other lane.
Yeah. And, you know, the cell phones now they're overriding people's sense of survival. I heard one researcher say, and I'm wondering why these folks that are so young, you know, I'm always, you know, the car that comes whizzing past me and I look over real quick and they're going 80 and there's three lanes of traffic converging and it's like the most dangerous place in the world. This person's on their cell phone and they just zip past me. I'm thinking, man, they're either so confident as drivers or they're losing their sense of everything. I mean, it's astonishing to me, but I guess I'm rambling. Did you ever see that kind of thing?
I see it all the time.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I wish I didn't have to say that, but I see it like probably every day.
Do you hit bad traffic every day?
Well, Denver has a pretty bad traffic record, if you want to call it that. But it's not terrible, but I think it's gotten a little bit better since they added this new HOV lane. But
HOV lane.
Yeah, high occupancy vehicle. So anybody who can go in the lanes
if you have
like three or more people in the car, then you can use it, but you have to have this little transponder thing in your car to be able to make it free. I'm still not too clear about it, but I have the transponder in my car, so if I've got three people or more in my car, I can flip it over to that. Otherwise, it's got a little switch on it. So one says toll, one says HOV.
That's so interesting. I mean, this is because of our overpopulation.
I think it is, and people here can afford so much that everybody has their own car almost. And I don't know if you've ever done this, or in Ohio it's like this, but it probably is. If you look out on the highway, it's easier if you're riding the bus, because then you can actually pay attention to everybody who's driving in their car. One time I was on the bus and I was counting how many people are driving by themselves.
Oh,
it was
just
one person in their car, and it was like 90 to 95% of all cars that I saw on the highway were just one person.
I don't doubt it. I'm guilty of that. I have a long drive.
And me too.
You know. So
yeah, I mean, I've got to drive. A lot of times, I'm doing murals down in Denver, and that's a half an hour drive from Boulder, approximately, and so. Yeah, so but there's another guy who I work with who's also from Boulder. We try to carpool if we can, but
oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's so very, at least there's that. Good.
So, road rage. We talked about tangled ideas.
Oh, and I've thought about that a lot lately. Road rage is one of the really great ways to work on yourself. If you're driving your car a lot, it's a really, really great opportunity to work on controlling your emotions.
Oh yeah.
And your feelings that result.
I had a very interesting experience about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I was on it wasn't a major expressway, but it was kind of like a fairly big expressway that was coming into a town area. It's kind of where Granville and Newark kind of go together, and there was a car right in front of me, a red SUV of some kind, and my Prius, and we were going 5 miles an hour over the speed limit, which is slower than a lot of people want to go. So we were going, I don't know, the speed limit was 55, we were going 60. And I don't know if they do this in Colorado. That would be really interesting to know. The big thing in Ohio now is tailgating. Do they do that in Colorado?
Not as much. I feel like Colorado drivers are a little bit more conscientious. Mm-hmm. Not so much. It does seem to be a little bit different. There are different driving trends around the country. Mm-hmm. There certainly is tailgating here, but it's not so pervasive that I get too worked up about it.
It's standard
very often.
It's standard operating procedure here, and people become very indignant if you don't pull over immediately when they start to tailgate you. And you know, I'm a kind of a funny guy. Like if I'm going 5 or 10 miles an hour over the speed limit already, my thinking is, well, you go around me. So I don't know who's right here, but a lot of times I'll just sit there. And in this case, there was another person right in front of me, so it doesn't really matter. Anyway, this fellow, he had a trailer and a pickup truck. And what he ended up doing was passing both me and this other driver, and he went on the berm on the side of the road.
Oh, no.
Seriously. I mean, it was unbelievable. I had another experience on this little farther up on a road, 161, and me and another driver were going like 65 or 70. No, I think we were going 70. And this was where the speed limit's 70, so we were going 70. And we were like right together. He was in the slow lane. I was like in the fast lane. And a motorcycle zoomed between us, driving on the white line. And this guy that came, he had to be going 130 miles an hour.
I've seen that before.
Have you?
A few times, yeah. Only, you know, two or three times probably. But one of the times was in Ohio, actually. It's like near Cleveland. Yeah, this guy just goes, you know, just
yeah, exactly.
Everybody stopped, and like that's got to be a total rush of adrenaline for that guy, because you never know if somebody's okay. gonna pull over into the next lane. You know, like, screw this lane, I'm going to go there. And then just, you know.
Exactly. Like, I could have killed him and just by just weaving a little bit or something.
Yeah.
Know? It's so crazy. Oh, you've done me a great service here. If I can find my exactly where I put this in my notes. Because I wanted to talk. Oh, boy. It's so funny when I do this stuff. Okay. Auslösen. We're going to talk. You talked about a rush, right? The guy speeding, the adrenaline rush. Now, listen to what Billy says on page 49 in The Might of Thoughts. And he says, this means everything is connected, and this interconnectivity is rendered particularly stable because the reward center is triggered by all these aggressions and degeneracies, and the brain is flooded with the neurotransmitter dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is people get addicted to the dopamine. Just like Conor McGregor, it's another fight. He's addicted to the dopamine. The guy's speeding on his motorcycle.
Yep.
So let me continue. Consequently, the human being feels himself or herself affirmed, big and powerful in his or her aggression, Gewalt and degeneracy, and this is precisely what leads to the situation that he or she becomes addicted to his or her acts of Gewalt, and therefore always continue to strive for evil and unleash disputes, wars, and all-around death and destruction in order to satisfy his or her brain reward cascade by means of the neurotransmitter dopamine. Please comment, Ren.
I could comment in a few different directions on that.
Go for it.
But one thing I was thinking about is that so many of the wars in our history mostly were started by men, fought by men,
mm-hmm.
right? Because if you look back into history, men were kings, men were in power, men were also in the church. You didn't really, well, because they, like in the Talmud of Manuel, they said that they deleted all the, or Billy was talking about how they deleted all the disciplesses. Emmanuel had disciplesses. And the church of the day got rid of them. And so then you had only men in the church. And it's the same with... Same within politics, only men, and women were kind of have always been treated as inferior,
mm-hmm.
and there still are to some extent today. Although I think it's gotten a little bit better, but my girlfriend brought up an interesting point last night. We were watching this show Outlander. You ever heard of that or seen it?
That's familiar, but I don't know that I've seen it.
It's really good. But it's, she was, I don't think I want to digress and get into what that's all about, but,
it's hard.
She was saying that yeah.
And tell the story.
But there are battles that happen in that show. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and my girlfriend was talking about how it's all these battles happened throughout history because it was all men involved who couldn't communicate. And maybe if the women would have been involved more, then people would have been able to communicate better. And all these battles and all these wars and stuff throughout history would have been nipped in the bud.
Well, it's very interesting that you bring that up, because I was chatting a little bit with Carol Steves, you know her, right?
Yeah, we were actually in a group together out here in Colorado. We have about 7 or 8 people in our study group, depending on who comes every month.
Doesn't she kind of lead that group?
I don't know. I wouldn't say so. She definitely talks a lot during our group meetings. She has a lot to contribute, okay. But we don't really have too much of a leader. Although, I guess if there were to be a leader, she's a good candidate because she has very good leadership skills. But that's we try to keep it as even as we can. You know,
some people
contribute more than others. Some people contribute less. Mm-hmm. Anyways,
there is, in Arizona, there was a woman. Her name is Deborah, and I don't know if she's still leading the group in Munns Park or not. But there is this trend that I'm trying to say. You were talking about if women would have been in charge. Well, I'm seeing that there are women that are popping up as kind of the organizers in the study groups, which I think is a good thing.
Well, Carol definitely organizes a lot of things. And her husband, Bill, does a lot too. Mm-hmm. They both do a lot. I try to do as much as I can. And we are, the three of us are all passive members of FIGU.
Oh, and so you go to Switzerland then?
Sometimes. I mean, sometimes. I've been 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess the first time was sort of 2 times in 1 because I went for 2.5 weeks and then I to the Semyazi Silver Star Center and then I traveled around a little bit and then I went back. So that was kind of twice in one visit, right, or in one trip.
How long were you away from home? 3 weeks?
6 weeks. So
6 weeks. Wow.
So 2.5 weeks. Yeah, two and a half weeks at the center, then another like 3 weeks on the road in, around Europe, and then another 2 weeks after that, a few days. Sorry, just to finish out the week.
That's impressive. That's a lot of travel.
I was very fortunate to be able to do that. It was. You probably wonder how are you able to pay for all that, right? So
how are you able to stand not having your own bed to sleep in for six weeks?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of exciting, you know. It's kind of invigorating.
Yeah.
If you look at it the right way, but I mean, my grandmother had passed away, and then I inherited a few $1,000. I went over there, decided that was one of the best things I could do, is to finally be able to organize a trip for myself to finally go meet Billy after studying his stuff for 5 or 6 years at that point.
Did you get the chance to talk to him?
Yeah. That's a few times. I mean, I saw him like every day for like 2.5 weeks, you know?
Wow.
So, maybe there were probably a few days that I didn't see him at all, but most days I would say, and sometimes I would just spot him. Sometimes we would have a passing, just a few words.
But, was it in German always?
No, it was in English. I mean,
he would speak to you in English.
Yeah,
that's good. He doesn't do that a lot anymore, does he?
Not a whole lot. I mean, he will to accommodate to people, but he prefers not to.
Yeah.
But he knows how to speak English. I mean, have you seen the video with Michel Delafave?
Yes.
So he speaks English most of the time in that. Mm-hmm. He's not the best English speaker, but I think he understands a lot of words and most things that you were going to say to him.
Hmm.
But somebody had a pretty good point, is that if you... I forget who said this, but it doesn't matter. But I agree with it, is that if you you can spend 30 minutes talking to Billy, I think it was Randy Arena on Facebook or something, you can spend 30 minutes talking to Billy or 30 minutes studying his material that he's written. And what do you think you're going to benefit more from?
Probably studying his writings, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So...
I have noticed that There is one interview he did with Christian that was supposed to be geared towards children, and children asked the questions, but and Billy's responses, you know, are just subtitled as English. And that's one of the most profound discussions. And I'll have to look for it again. If you don't know which one I'm talking about, does that ring a bell?
It is. It does. It's his Billy interview from 2011.
Yes.
And I remember when that came out, I actually did the, I transcribed it, transcribed the whole thing on into a typed format so people could read it if they didn't have time, didn't want to watch the video or.
If you can think of it, send that to me if you still have it, if you don't mind.
It's on Future of Mankind. So I transcribed it and I put it on in under, it's under Interviews with Billy. Okay. And there's one from 1998, one from 1988, and then the 2011 one.
Wow. I typed a lot of that up and just put it on my website. But if you did the whole thing.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
It's all on there. So sorry. Didn't find out about it until now. We could have saved you a little bit of work. But
That's okay. That's okay. Yeah. That it was one of the most profound. He got very into depth in things because it's so
he
funny.
Did.
He was supposed to be, you know, answering questions for children, but his answers were like so profound and in depth. Mm-hmm. It was great, and it was I could see where it would have been very traumatic for a religious person to listen to that.
Yeah.
You know?
I think Carol told me that her son actually was one of the people who submitted a question, and it was, and he was not quite a child at that point in time. He was maybe in his late teens or early 20s even. Wow. But I think he submitted the one to the about the Yellowstone supervolcano.
Oh, that thing's supposed to go off at any time, I guess?
At some point in the next 100 years or 1,000 years, I think, but not during Billy's lifetime, as far as he knows. I think is what he said.
Hmm.
So hopefully not in our lifetime.
Oh,
that would pretty much ruin the North American continent, kind of, wouldn't it?
I guess it could.
I mean, I've wondered if that was the thing that these talked about in the Hanok prophecies, where it said something about
raging firestorms.
No, it was like until the worst catastrophe has ever befallen
human history,
or yeah, something like that, like a terrible catastrophe that happens, which I had in front of me, but
I thought that one was about nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons being released by automated systems.
I don't know. I mean that. I don't know. I don't have an answer for it. I've often wondered what that would be in the Yellowstone eruption has always kind of crossed my mind as a potential for that, but I don't know.
Very interesting. You know this whole thing. Like, here I am studying the mind of thoughts, and it's hard to put into words. My show's changed. I used to talk more about other kind of things, but now I'm focusing on, I hate to use the word mundane, but it's, when you get down to the brass tacks, this is what's, this kind of thing, like being able to control our thoughts, is going to be what makes us or breaks us.
Yeah, I agree.
Not how much we know about the time of Atlantis or whatever, you know, which I find totally fascinating, by the way.
But I do too. Yeah. So, oh man.
I don't know if I'm being impulsed or it's just a logical thing to do.
Well, but the Atlantis stuff is interesting, but it can't help you too much in your everyday life, you know.
Right.
It's like that's kind of what it's about. Is I mean, you're going to have enjoyment through reading about interesting things with Atlantis and other stuff similar to that. But I think most people would find it more enjoyment if they actually start tackling the problems that are in their life head on by addressing them at the root, which is in the thoughts.
Another thing besides Atlantis would be Billy and the Mothership. I've been wanting to get back to that.
Man.
That's so cool.
That is really cool, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But I'm doing this kind of stuff. I'm being led or whatever to focus more on this. And it's because I still notice in my own lifetime the slow creeping of negative thought patterns that come in. Do you ever notice that?
I do. I do all the time. It's just something that you're never going to be able to master. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I can't say never about that, right?
So, but it's a continual struggle.
It's like some people think that you just read it and then you just
boom.
Know it now.
Yeah.
No, you know, it's
no,
like
no.
It doesn't really work like that with this type of stuff. You gotta really study it and make it become a part of you. You know, one of the things that so there's two things I want to bring up relating to that, and one was this great article by Atlant Bieri.
Mm-hmm.
It's called On Studying Billy's Writings, thoughts about studying Billy's writings. And what he basically says is that one great thing to do is to go through with a fine-tooth comb, with a dictionary,
yes.
actually, and
yes.
look up all of the words that you're not totally clear on, and even some of the words that you are clear on. You know, not even I'm not talking about a word like of or the, like articles,
sure.
but
sure.
Like just looking up the word
trigger,
like trigger, or for example, or yeah, just any of those words like auslösen or gewagt, or I think that's gewagt, something like that. But look,
yes,
you know, like looking up those words and then you get a whole definition, and then you get synonyms, and it really helps to help understand what he's actually talking about, and opens up new cognitions that you might not have had, and then the second point was that when I was in Switzerland, I was talking to, I think, Patrick Chanel.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the core group members over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him if he had read all of Billy's books. Because,
mm-hmm.
like, I probably would have if I could speak German. You know, I probably would
mm-hmm.
have read all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he hadn't. And I said, well, why not? And he said something that stuck with me. He said that, well, I would rather just study one of his books extremely in depth to try to get as much out of it as possible than to just scour through all of his stuff and just skim. Yeah.
Well, that's what's happening to me. It wasn't by choice. It wasn't a plan. But just to try to learn the mind of thoughts, I mean, literally, I'm not exaggerating. I think I've read this 8 times now. And there's way more that I haven't got yet. So maybe I could spend the rest of my life on this book. I don't plan to. Don't know that I want to, but, you know, it could happen.
I mean, you could. You probably will. I mean, you might. Well, not as intensively as you are right now, but you'll probably revisit it here and there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's interesting how, physical experiences that you go through in life, they totally change the way that you look at his writings, because his writings are very bare bones. Some people think they're dry. Some people think that he's too long winded, but he's very detailed, and he's very, kind of bare bones. I don't know. Bare bones is not maybe the best way of putting it, but I would say that, you know, like,
I've heard people say that he repeats a lot, and I'm thinking to myself, thank God, or thank the creation, or whatever you want to say, that he does that, because
thank him.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Thank him.
It's like actually doing it.
Because it doesn't strike me as being repetitive at all, because he's always bringing out and elaborating on a new concept. Or
he's hitting it from many different angles, you know?
Yes, yes.
And another point to the repetition is that, like, we need to be told multiple times in order to get it through our thick skulls.
you know? That's so true.
And so, especially with good things.
With good things, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, why not? You know?
His passages on love, for example, Love Letter 27, I repeat all the time on this show because I just think they're so important. Like, love is the highest principle in all creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And love will forever be the purpose for our existence. It's those concepts are so beautiful and inspiring and dramatic. Like you said, the good things, right?
Yeah. The good things. There's so much good stuff in his work. Mm-hmm. But the thing I was just talking about, what was it? You can be at different points in your life and gain a totally different cognition out of reading the same thing if you read it like a few months apart, maybe even.
I was talking to Marianne about that through an email, and she was saying, you know, you can read his book 10 times, and each time through it, it's almost like reading a new book.
Right. It's really fascinating the way that that works. And somebody else also said, I don't know if it was Marianne, but, that if you say, what was I going to say?
We're talking about reading the books multiple times and getting something new and different each time through.
Yeah.
I
lost it. Yeah. Sorry.
That happens.
But in the psyche, the beginning of the psyche, it said, don't read this as a book. Well, I couldn't help myself. I just read it, you know.
You read it straight through?
Well, not straight through, but, I read however much as I could, and then I put it down, and I just kept reading it. But it says something like read just a little bit at a time.
Had to do that. I had to read the first, like, 20 pages. Oh, man, I'm not kidding. 15 or 20 times. I had to. It was like I was reading it and nothing was sticking. Then I have to read it again and I'm like, okay, I got like 0.5% that time. Let me read it again. That's what I had to do. It was a very long process.
Interesting.
And that book is so...
I want to get something really quick.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I'm just want to get The Way to Live really quick.
We have a passage to read. We're running out of time. I want to hear a passage. You can close the show.
Okay.
Actually, I'll read this while you're looking. This is in the psyche. It says, "The earth human being is particularly expert at clothing matters into words and terms which are inappropriate and completely false. As a rule, this happens due to the complete ununderstanding and the misinterpretation of the actual connections and the facts of reality. In particular, the mass of the blame is borne by the esoterics and the parapsychologists, as well as the other occultists of all eras, who twisted the matters of the teaching of the spirit and the material consciousness connections into an endless false explanations and false teachings." Anyway, that whole thing about our false terminology here on the earth, I think, is so important to remember. I would say examples would be demons, angels. I hate those terms.
I know.
Make me crazy.
Oh, man.
There are no demons. There are no angels. A spirit form must have a body. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let me go on. Let me hear. I'm ranting. But the whole religious doctrine comes out of that. And the whole irresponsibility of not taking responsibility for your bad actions, like the tangled thoughts we're talking about here. Oh, it's a demon, man. I'm indwelled.
That's so archaic, isn't it?
It's so crazy. It's so backward. But it's religious. It's what people do. Did you find your passage?
I did. And I'm not sure if this one part that I was thinking of is in this passage, but it goes along with what you were saying with the wrong terminology, like talking about love, talking about true love and how, I don't see it in this particular passage that I was looking for. It's in Might of the Thoughts, it's in Way to Live, and it's about true love. It's number 60. It's on page 56.
Okay. I like this, that book.
This is a really great one. But the thing I was talking about, or that I was thinking about rather, is that love does not come from a God. It's not, and it doesn't come out of the heart of the human being. That's kind of like along with that wrong terminology. Like,
yes, like
people think about a heart when they think about love, and it doesn't come out of your heart.
No, no,
it's from your brain. It's not a gift from a God either.
And there's also effective love, which is true love, which is stable. And then there's false love, which is romantic.
Affective love. Effective versus affective. Yeah. But this one is really great. Do you mind if I read a little bit of this?
This is
really good. It says, when the human being falls in love, then he or she shall give it free rein as he or she does when he or she follows the love when it beckons to him or her. The ways of the love are often hard touchstones of the life, quite often difficult and steep. But if the human being is enveloped in a breath-thin tissue of the love, then may he or she devote himself or herself to it and preserve it. He or she shall not pay attention to the blades of the swords and the thorns of the bushes which hem the love's wayside and try to injure the breath which surges with love. The human being shall not pay attention to the possible wounds which can be thereby torn. Rather, he or she shall understand and recognize only the love and know about it. The true love is strong and is even able to destroy dreams and shatter wishes, just as the icy north wind withers the blossoms. Because just as the love crowns the human being, it also tortures him or her. And the love tortures because inherent to it are the renunciation and demands which the human being has to integrate himself or herself. Into which the human being has to integrate himself or herself, which often very much goes against his or her will. Thus, the love allows the human being to grow in order to nevertheless also curtail him or her in many things of the life. But whoever truthfully integrates himself or herself into the love gains. The love allows the human being to rise to the highest heights towards the light of the radiating sun so that he or she may caress the tenderest blossoms. But just as quickly, he or she may fall down again into the ground to sink into the soil and to shake the roots of the plants in the earth boundness. And
that's beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. This is like one of my favorite passages in this book, and it goes on for another two pages, but I'm not going to read it all. Part of it is really good. It says the true love is a concentrated form of the fine spiritual perception and is not built upon emotions, because truthfully it is fine spiritual perception itself. Therefore, love itself is only power, and it never takes anything which would not be of itself.
You know, you could do two or three shows on just that single statement that you just made there, you read.
I know.
Well, Rem, thanks you, man. This has been a great show. Good job. I appreciate your input, and we need to do this more often.
I'm down.
All right. Thanks, man. Yeah. We'll see you later.
Yeah, sounds good. You too.
Bye-bye.